Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The chief economist with the National Association of Realtors this week told more than 200 agents gathered in Columbus that things are looking up, especially in Ohio. Joining us now to talk real estate is Todd Helpbringer. He's president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Welcome back, Todd.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you.
Also with us is real estate analyst Rob Vogt of Vogt Santer Insight. Welcome back, Rob.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning.
Question for listeners, are you buying or selling a home? Where do you fall in the predictions for higher home prices, above or below? Give us a call at WOSU.org/allsides and let us know. Is your real estate agent recommending you lower your asking price or increase it? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've already gotten into a heated conversation before we even went on the air about new rules for qualified borrowers.
Yes.
That are being put forth by the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, headed by
Richard Cordray,
former Attorney General of the state of Ohio. Todd, tell us what the rules mean to you.
Well, to me, you know, I guess to speak freely, it's just a bunch of nonsense. I mean, all along, we as mortgage brokers or bankers or even banks in general should be looking out for the client's best interest. Can they afford this payment? Do they have the whereabouts to make the mortgage payment every month? So I think half the blame goes into Fannie Mae that puts these products out there. I mean, I remember back in, I'll call it the olden days when I started this industry 25 years ago, that they had ratios of your debt to income. It could not exceed 28% of your income, couldn't go towards the housing, 36% to all obligations, period. I think financing at that point was very successful. And then it got into some silly financing when they had this housing bubble and this home ownership act for everybody, where basically ratios, we saw ratios that were allowing clients to go up to 60% of their gross monthly income.
And that's because they changed the rules.
Exactly. The Home Ownership Act for Everybody, and again, not to point fingers, Greenspan and Clinton started this, and they were making up loan programs to fit clients to get them into homes. But there's no way they could make these payments. It's impossible to use 60% of your gross income to cover obligations. You are setting yourself up to failure. So I blame Fannie Mae. You know, I guess 50% responsibility for both parties. The consumer also should look at the payment. How realistic is this? Can I make this payment? And that's what we talked earlier about, that I always ask my clients that even though you fit the ratio requirements that the lenders have currently, how does this make you feel? Can you make your payments? Can you still save for your future? Do you have money to fix up the property? I mean, things are going to break. Things are going to happen.
And there's not going to be a landlord around to kick around.
You know,
right?
That's what I was going to follow up with, Todd, is that that's why a lot of folks are renting today. And that's why the rental market in Columbus is as strong as it's been in 25 years. You know, a lot of these younger people in their 20s that have the student housing debt that can't now qualify for a single family house or to buy a house, they've turned to rentals, and we've got the strongest rental market we've had in years, and that's reflected by the fact that we've got about 5,000 or 6,000 new units in the planning pipeline. So it's going to really change the landscape in Columbus rather dramatically over the next several years.
Yeah, let's talk about the predictions. Lawrence Yun, the chief economist with the National Association of Realtors, predicted big increases in home prices and sales. And that's across the country. He predicted even better numbers for Ohio. And I just thought statewide, could we talk about that briefly? What were they looking at, like 15% over the course of a three-year period? Rob, what do you, you know?
I think that is at least, and what we should clarify there is that is over a three-year time period. So that's a 5 or 6% increase in home values or sales prices over each year. Which I think is, frankly, fairly realistic. In fact, I think that article goes on that there's another predictor who indicated that a 6% growth rate in single-family home values. I think over the next 12 months or 18 months, I think that's fairly realistic. Although I think people have to realize there's going to be pockets where it's going to be a lot higher, and there's going to be areas where we're going to continue to see decline in home values. And that's reflected by the school district that house is in, the condition that it's in, the neighborhood that it's in, the crime rates. I suspect that in some of the rural areas in Ohio, in some of the smaller markets, that we'll probably not see anything close to that.
Where there's not as big a demand.
Where there's not as big a demand. But in the urban areas and the suburban areas, we're going to see growth or values increasing by maybe closer to 10% a year.
Going back to that 5% prediction, that's what it sort of used to be like. We could expect that 5 or 6% a year.
Yeah, I think 2 to 4% was always kind of the, quote, norm.
Okay.
And I think that's fantastic growth. You know, go back to his prediction. I mean, I would love to see what his data is showing. Because, again, right now it's such an uneasy time with all the rules changing for underwriting guidelines for borrowers. I mean, if you could tell me what's going to happen in the next 6 months, I'll buy you a watch. I mean, it's just, it's that uncertain right now. And I agree with Rob. I think it's a nice mix. I'm glad there is student housing or rentals out there because we need, there are people that are just unable to maintain a property. And there's nothing wrong with that. But they don't need to own a home, rent. And that keeps a vile, you know, the economy moving because you have people that want to invest in properties. Fantastic. You want to be a renter? Fantastic.
Well, and then people are just, it's more of a mobile society.
Yes.
People are moving around more. They need to have that kind of an option, too. And there is a question about how much upscale versus more affordable housing is available. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guests are Rob Vogt, analyst with Vogt Center Insight, and also Todd Helpbringer of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. We're talking about the rental and, well, basically the housing industry in Central Ohio. And across the state and country. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What are you pricing your house at? What are you expecting your house to sell for? Do you see an increase from what it was last year or not? Give us a call, 614-292-8513.
One of the things, Ann, I wanted to point out in that article was that I thought was interesting that he was also citing the fact that the household formations was going to accelerate over the next couple of years. And I think that's rather interesting that we've had a lot of young people who had previously moved in with their parents and are now moving out, that divorce rates are now going to increase again because people have the confidence in the economy that can actually come to a settlement in a divorce.
So they'll be splitting up
they'll
households.
Be splitting up and creating two households where there was one. So there are some dynamics there that really do point to an increase. But I think it's interesting that at least what he cited will probably go more towards rentals than single family.
Yeah, I would agree. Because you look at the divorce situation, sometimes they're going to need something right away. They may not have a down payment if they've not sold the house. And if they've sold the house for less, then maybe there's no equity in the property. So I agree. It's going to be diverse, and I think that is a fantastic It helps on all sides of the economy.
Given what the predictions are for the real estate market, those who waited for their divorce until now or in the next year or so probably are going to do a lot better.
I don't think you ever do well on a divorce.
Well, but, I'm talking strictly financially
sure,
when
sure.
you're splitting up those assets and having to sell the house and that sort of thing. A lot of people took a big hit
sure.
when they were forced to sell for no other reason
yeah.
than the fact that they were getting divorced.
That's right.
I think the longer you wait, yeah, I'm sure the home values will start to increase and mm-hmm. you'll do better. But when is that going to be back to where it was previously? You know, the 2007s, 8s, 9s. You know, hard to say when we'll get back to those levels. But I think it's going to improve every year a little bit.
Well, let's put it in perspective then. What has it dropped from the, let's recall that and refresh our memories. I don't really want to, but why don't we go ahead and do it anyway?
I mean, I would say easily, Rob, you might have some, I mean, at least 20%. I would say home values have dropped 20%.
Yeah, I was going to say that about,
yeah,
I think that's a good number. So, yeah, you were starting out to get back to that point is going to take us 5, 6, 7 years.
Maybe
just
10 years if it's at the 2% range.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you predicted, I think, at least the last time, one or both of you did, Todd, that it could be a good 20 years.
Right.
And by then, a lot of people who are homeowners now will be selling, so they may come out okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to buy the property and look at it as an investment that you love, you know, the home ownership fact, then you're going to do fine. Just stay in the property, maintain your property, and you'll be A-OK. If you look to get in there, make a quick buck, you're not gonna. It's not going to happen.
Kind of like art.
Yes.
Don't ever buy any art that you don't like.
Right, great idea. Great idea.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also use the All Sides Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Lawrence Yoon, the chief economist with the National Association of Realtors, said his forecast came with some caveats, one of them being that the mortgage interest tax deduction would be retained. That's something that's out there now. They're looking at, you know, revamping, of course, our tax code, and we don't know what's going to come down the pike out of Washington, as usual. Do you agree that that could have a big impact or not?
I don't know. I mean, I think if people like to own a home, they like the feeling of ownership. I know personally, I would own a home whether it was interest deduction or not. It just feels good to know that this is my property. I'll get the appreciation. I'll keep the house. I just like home ownership and what it provides. It's even more of a stability. And that's what they wanted to do back with the Home Ownership Act, promote stability, which is fine, but don't grow the tree straight up.
I guess gradual. It goes back to the whole idea of if you really get a house, if you really want a house,
right.
Don't get one to make a buck or get a break on your taxes every year.
That's right. But, you know, that's a little bit of a change in what we were brought up to understand that you bought a house because it was a good investment and that was going to be something that you can count on in retirement. And that dynamic has completely changed over the past 5 years. So, you know, it's going to take, I think, some education of people today to understand that maybe you don't buy it as an investment decision, but you buy it because you love where you want to live. You love the house. You love the fact that it gives you a lot of space and you can do the things that you want to do. So it's kind of interesting to see that dynamic changing over the past 5-6 years. And that's a relatively short time period when you consider going back 25-30 years that we were taught that buying a house was a great investment.
Yeah. But it's also a part of maybe your retirement plan. So let's say the house, you don't get deduction, but it appreciates 2-4% a year. Well, fantastic. $100,000 home is going to go $2,000 to $4,000 a year.
Better than a savings account.
Add that with your 401k or whatever else you're doing. So it's a combined picture. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I
think there's a little sales pitch right there, Todd.
My guests are Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Santer Insight, and Todd Heltbringer. He's the president of Heltbringer Mortgage Services. We're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them. 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record. It's Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News Director Mike Thompson and his panel provide in-depth analysis of several topics, including a look at gun control in Ohio and a preview of Governor Kasich's coming plans to overhaul education and the tax code. Watch Columbus on the Record tomorrow night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. 33 degrees with partly sunny skies, a high near 35. Clouds tonight, a low of 21. Support for 89.7 comes from Green Bean Delivery, offering home delivery of fresh organic produce and natural groceries, striving to make healthy eating more accessible to the communities of Greater Columbus. Details on Green Bean Delivery's products, as well as how to place an order, can be found online at greenbeandelivery.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the Central Ohio real estate market with Rob Vogt of Vogt Santer Insight and also Todd Heltbringer of Heltbringer Mortgage Services. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Todd, you wanted to go back and talk a little bit more about those new qualifications
right.
out there for home ownership.
Yeah, I mean, so basically it used to be, you know, 20-some years ago, we had defined ratios of 28 and 36, okay? And
in terms of
your gross monthly income that could go towards the house payment, which is 28% of your income, and then 36% of your income, your gross income, could go to cover all debts, housing, if you had credit cards, student loans, automobile payments, et cetera. Then it got where, when the Home Ownership Act for Everybody came out, where they were just making up ratios. I mean, there were loans that could be approved with 60% of your gross monthly income going to cover all your expenses.
With no other ancillary qualifications?
No. It was because then they throw in the thing, well, if that doesn't work for you, because they really want to spur on home ownership, we'll do a no income, a no asset, no employment loan, which you're setting the client up for failure. Now, again, I think half the responsibility has to fall upon the borrower, too, when you see the payment and it's whatever, $1,500 a month and you don't make that much. I mean, really? You actually thought you should sign up and then you say, I didn't know what I signed. So don't buy all that because there are so many disclosures. Even back 25 years ago, there's always disclosures showing your payment 10, 15 times through the process. But after that debacle, this housing boom and or boom and then bust, Then they went back to the pendulum swung the other direction, whereas now you can go up to 45% of your gross monthly income to cover all debts. But then now I don't understand that that's what we've always had, and now the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau wants to come back and say, well, now you've got to qualify the borrower to make sure they qualify. I mean, excuse me, that's what we're always supposed to be done. We're professionals in this industry. We have to qualify our people.
And so if you're already doing it, where's the skin off your back? But it comes in the form of more fees.
Fees, but there could be penalties to me or a bank.
If you don't prove that you've done this.
Right. But again, there are so many checks and balances through the process that, you know, when we input your information into our system, it comes back with an approval based on what we inputted. Then we have to basically validate what we've told the system we have, what your income is, what your assets are. So there's hard numbers to validate every approval. And if it fits the, quote, Fannie Mae engine that they'll approve you upon, what more do they want us to do? I mean, Rich Cordray, I don't understand what he's doing with these guidelines. Mm-hmm. I would love to sit down and talk to him, Richard.
Richard Cordray, are you out there?
Yeah, but it's a silliness because this is what a mortgage professional should always be doing, qualifying the borrower and then asking them the hard question of how does this make you feel? Set the client up for success, not for failure, because failure doesn't help anybody. It ruins the economy, and it's just a disaster.
Carrie asks on Facebook, I've been looking to buy a home over the past 3 years. Are there any benefits to buying a home in short sale? Many realtors don't want to handle short sale homes because the process is longer and more of a hassle. First of all, what's a short sale?
I mean, basically, the bank is settling for less that's owed on the property. You know, the bank is owed $100,000. They're going to negotiate and sell the property for $80,000. You know, she is correct. They're a nightmare because we had one that I think it took over 90 days to close, and it was always delay after delay.
What kind of delays? Why delays with a short sale?
That's what I don't understand. And
maybe the bank's still trying to get out of it.
Well, no, not so much that. It's just that there is a backlog. They have so much in the system. But it's also the court system. I mean, I read that in New York and I think in Florida, it's over like 1,000 days on a foreclosure it takes to go through the system. I don't understand that. I mean, it's pretty simple. If the borrower's not making the payment, they should have to give the property back to the lender. And or the lender can say, well, fine, I'll only enter into a rental agreement with you and let you rent it. But why does it take months and months and months of the client not making the payment? It's just not, I use the word fair. It's not fair to the lender because they're going to get the property back. There's going to be taxes going to be due on it. Maybe water bills are going to be doing it. They're going to all fall ahead of the liens.
If there are people renting the property, too, it's not fair to them. But they don't know. They're in limbo, too.
Right. But in a short sale, Todd, they don't have to go through the foreclosure process.
Correct.
I think the challenge has been is to find the person in the bank that ultimately makes that decision and says, yes, we'll accept $20,000 less than what is owed. So I think that's the delays that you run into on those short sales is finding the ultimate person to make that decision.
Yeah, why aren't the banks seeing it the same way all the rest of us have to see it? It's not like they're taking $20,000 less than what's owed. They're taking $20,000 less probably than what it's worth. And
yeah.
They're having to deal with having those assets left on there. It's part of the risk of what they've been doing.
Yeah, and I go back to the client that wants to get this property short sold. A lot of them have used the excuse, and I've heard it and I've seen it, that when I bought the property, it's worth $100. Now it's only worth $80, so I don't want it no more. Well, it doesn't quite actually work like that because there's no way in the note in the mortgage, and I hate to be this way, where it says only make your payments if the property's to your benefit.
Right.
I mean, you signed up for this thing, in my opinion, see it through. Now, if you can't make the payment, then you know, give the property back to the lender, or Rob, like you said, have the bank empower someone to make these decisions. As painful as they may, make the decision so you can get the property back, either lease it out or sell it or whatever. But delaying this doesn't help anybody.
I mean, we don't get rid of our cars. They start losing value the minute we drive them off the lot,
right.
Supposedly.
You go back to why we had tens of thousands of people buying homes that couldn't afford them.
Right.
This is what happens when they do that.
But to answer her question, I think if she doesn't mind putting up with the process, I think it provides a very good value to her going through the short sale process.
Bill and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. We'll be listing in Powell May 1st. You want to make a prediction on the Powell market?
Why May 1st?
Well, there's a pool involved, and you want to have the pool open.
Oh, that's right. It's Bill with the pool.
I remember you, Bill.
Bill, well, I look forward to you gentlemen coming on.
Yeah. Actually, I said it's Bill from Powell.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anything, Bill, I think, you know, if you stage your house properly and have all the upkeep, I think you're going to do fantastic. It's just you have to see what your expectations are and what the neighborhood's prices are doing. You know, you can't price yourself out of the neighborhood, but as long as you kind of compare yourself with similar homes, you're going to do fantastic. It's just, I think you'll do better in this makes. I think it's going to be a great season because interest rates are still going to be fantastic than, say, last year or the year before.
And I think Powell is going to be one of those areas where we see a higher rate of growth than we do in some of the other areas in Central Ohio just because of the school system and the mm-hmm. desirability of the neighborhoods.
Thank you very much.
All right, Bill.
Good luck, Bill. Speaking of the interest rates, that was another caveat in that prediction by the chief economist with the National Association of Realtors. He expects rates on the benchmark 30-year loan to rise to 4% by the end of this year, so end mm-hmm. of 2013. Is that about what you're expecting to? So yeah. Not get it now while you can. If it's low, it's going
to
go up.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, the rates, you know, the rates are controlled by the 10-year bond market. And again, I go back to these guys making these predictions. Tell me where the 10-year bond market's going to be, or tell me the stock to buy that's going to have a great return. You just don't know. It's all going to be based on what happens to the economy. I think rates at 4%, and right now rates are at 3 3/8, 3.25 for 30-year fixed. I don't see the big difference. I mean, rates are fantastic. As long as they're under 5%, they're still fantastic.
Right. I was going to make the same comment, Todd. I mean, if it's 3.25 or 4, who cares?
Who cares? Yeah, we have sometimes clients that are refinancing, and they have this magic number of, I have to have it at 3.25. If it's 3 3/8, I try to break it down. I go, for the risk, it's going to be $25 a month. Do you want to, you know, have that risk? You're already at 5.5. Like you say, Rob, does it really matter? I mean, just get in there and get it over with. You know, get the process started.
I see what you mean. Is they're at 5.5? They're trying to get down to something.
Right.
And it's
it makes
not,
sense.
Get it done now.
Get it done. Exactly.
Right. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio with Rob Vogt of Vogt Santer Insight and also Todd Helpbringer of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. You can go to our website or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Bob in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you. I have a question and a comment, if you've got the time. I was wondering, particularly, one of your or both of your guests were discussing the anticipated rise in home values. I think one of your guests said 2 to 4, and the other said perhaps up to 10%. Well, there was also a discussion about incomes and affordability. Incomes have not been going up over a period of about 40 years. They essentially have been flat or declining. How are we going to pay more and more for houses and keep the ratios that I bought at and that one of your guests cited, and at the same time have incomes that are not going up to support the higher prices? Because that's a direct cause for all of the other talk about, well, it was this or that political group, or it was the bankers, or it was somebody else. You had a lot of people buying stuff that they couldn't afford. And somebody sold it to them, they stupidly bought it, and now we've all got a mess. So I'm wondering how you figure that you're going to have a rising house market if you don't have incomes going up to support it.
Yep. I mean, Bob, that's a great comment. I mean, I think you will still have a slightly rising housing. But I use the word slightly because what happened when the housing bubble boom was going on was their house prices were going up 10 and 15 and 20%. So it was pricing everyone out of the market. I think now with the home values being dropped, in my opinion, 20%, it's back to a more realistic. And I agree that maybe incomes haven't increased as much, but I think with the home values decreasing as much as they have, I think it's brought a lot more people back into the market that can't afford.
Well, and I
go ahead.
No, excuse me. I interrupted.
Rob Vogt?
No, I was going to say, I think that's a very good comment, too. A very astute observation. We've actually had a transition from a larger share of renters today than we had even a couple of years ago. So there are a lot of people who are recognizing they don't have the incomes to afford properties and are transitioning to rental. And again, that's one of the reasons we're seeing such a strong rental market. And when we're talking, we're throwing out percentages of growth. Again, we're going to have areas where we have very high growth and some areas where we're going to continue to see declines in housing values. So for us to make blanket statements like this, I think is a little bit misleading, but I think it's a very valid point that, yes, in fact, incomes are very flat, and we will have trouble for many Americans to afford new properties in the future.
Mm-hmm. The reason that I raised this was that we watched over a period of, I don't know, a good 10 years, as we've done well, but we saw a lot of people who were not doing as well as we were, and they were buying much bigger houses, nice, new, big houses. They were very impressive. Well, of course, we looked at it and thought, what's wrong with us? Well,
I mean, Bob, nothing is wrong with you. You did the right thing.
The Joneses. Right.
You did the right thing, and that's why the demise of the market was that people bit off more than they can chew, and then they want to say, the bank gave me the loan. And I think, back I said, everyone has to have responsibility and skin in the game. You have to look at your own personal finances and say, does this feel comfortable, and does it still allow me to, quote, live a life?
Has this enabled a reformation of the housing market to prevent this kind of stupidity again?
It definitely has, because the guidelines have changed so much. And I made a comment earlier.
Well, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau is part of that
Correct.
Equation.
But, you know, the pendulum has swung so far the other direction. I can speak of the loans that Helpbringer Mortgage does. We've always dealt with A paper clients. Now, the A paper clients, in my opinion, the way we underwrote them, because we never did subprime loans in my shop, we are having them provide so much more documentation for the same loan. It's just crazy what the lenders are asking for now for a client that never was part of the demise. You know, the client that was part of the demise cannot get a loan anymore, nor are they sure they have received a loan to begin with. But that wasn't up to me. I tell you, I go back to blaming Fannie Mae for starting this lending practice out and wanted Homeownership Act for everybody. It's a silly concept, and they won't own up to it. But now the big brother's telling us that we're going to protect you now from the big bad banks with all these new rules and guidelines. And it's just, it's silliness. Just have common sense. And Ann's looking at me here. common sense and know what your budget is and live amongst your means.
The initial responsibility is, of course, the buyers. But the buyer had an awful lot of help, certainly including Fannie Mae, but the federal government has been involved in housing since at least the 1920s.
And they're one and the same. Fannie and government are one and the same.
Yep. Exactly. And what I'm wondering about is, how come everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else? Are we really supposed to believe that foolish, inexperienced, hopeful, desperate home buyers went out and knowingly defrauded J.P. Morgan?
You're 100% correct. You're 100%. I tell you, the blame would start, and I'll get off my soapbox here, the blame would start with Fannie Mae putting a loan product out there for clients to fail, and then the client actually thinking, I make $1,500 a month, I can afford a $3,000 a month house payment. Everyone had skin in the game, but I first start with Fannie and Greenspan and Clinton. They should have never invoked Homeownership Act for everybody at any cost, because they were giving loans away to people that had no business buying a piece of property.
Who made money?
Well, Wall Street made a ton of money. Wall Street lost a ton of money. And that's what we have right now, is the bubble. They were packaging up these products and selling them to derivatives and then basically buying insurance on the back end that they would fail.
Right, there was no risk on the part of Countrywide, because they would just sell their debt.
Exactly.
They still made money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Zilla may have gone to jail. I don't know.
I don't know what he was supposed to do, but I mean, you have a great question. In my opinion, white-collar crime, they did it to all of us, and yet none of them are taking responsibility. And I hate to go back to this. Richard Cordray right now is trying to be the white knight in shining armor. Yeah, coming to everyone's rescue. And I'm telling you, his department is the problem. They set these guidelines up, and now he wants to say, look at me, look what I'm going to do. I'm going to protect you from these evil banks. Dude, you're the one that made the guidelines.
Not him.
Not him personally,
but government.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
His institution, his particular, the Consumer Protection Finance.
Created by
Correct.
Congress.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's a new thing.
Right. Exactly.
And it was created because the existing system.
It's Dodd-Frank.
Dodd-Frank. Was a total failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dodd-Frank's a total failure too. I mean, they have to go back to use common sense.
And that's common sense might be the solution, but what do you do about dishonesty? Because that's the real problem here. I know a couple of people who are in the mortgage lending business, and they did just fine. I should do so well. And, they did just fine. They didn't go to jail. They don't. They got away.
I agree.
Bob, thanks for your call.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
No,
thanks,
not at
Bob.
All. Thanks for your call. Take
Appreciate
care.
It. Bye-bye.
We have Trevor wants to get back to that short sale issue. Hi, Trevor in Columbus. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm a real estate investor in Columbus, Ohio, and I had heard that there were new Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guidelines that for conforming loans, The short sale now has to be completed within 60 days, and I was wondering if you guys had heard anything about that.
No, Trevor, I have not heard anything like that at all. I mean, that may be so brand new, but they come out with new guidelines almost every minute, it seems okay. like. But I have not heard that, and that would be a great idea. That really would push these products through the market.
Yeah, it was my understanding that that went into effect in, as of November 1st, but, you know, I haven't heard much talk about it, so I didn't know if you guys, you know, knew anything else about that.
No. Okay. I don't know.
All right, Trevor, thanks. We'll see.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Yep. Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. We have a mortgage at 6.75%. We're on time every month. You know, we've done everything that normal people should do when they have a mortgage, right? And, you know, there's no reward for that from what I can see. We don't qualify for any of these home modification things that we get in the mail all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And refinancing just seems like such an arduous process, but I don't know. Should we try it? And then I have a second question, but you can start with that one.
I mean, Beth, 100%, you should try it. I mean, you didn't mention how much equity you have in the property, if that's one of your holdbacks, but, you know, if you've got credit, you know, above 740 credit score, and you've got some equity, I mean, definitely you should have opportunity to refinance. And so, you know, maybe let me know what your circumstances are. We're happy to take a look at it, but I don't see that being a problem at all.
Okay. Rob, anything?
No, I see no reason why you wouldn't investigate unless, 6%. As you pointed out, unless you don't have positive equity.
Right.
Okay.
She had a follow-up question? Or
okay. Beth, your second question?
Second question is baby boomers. Downsizing, I mean, just the 70 million people over whatever, 50, that are hitting the market. I think the demographics right now have got to be a huge issue to the mortgage market. What's changing there?
Well, that's a good question. And what we're seeing in the market is that as baby boomers are entering retirement, that they are looking at a variety of options. And one of those is selling their house and moving into an apartment that gives them the flexibility to live where they want to live and move when they want to move. I also believe that it's going to re-energize the condominium market that is seems to be lagging a little bit behind the for sale single family home market. But I think we're going to see a lot of baby boomers looking at a lot of different housing options over the next 5 to 10 years, and will have a dramatic impact on the overall housing market.
Beth, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you.
Yep. My guests are Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Santer Insight, and also Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. We're talking about the real estate market in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-9678, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, 89.7 NPR News would normally be doing our winter membership drive, but because of sustaining memberships, we've been able to eliminate this pledge drive. Sustaining members of the future of WOSU, your $15 or $20 per month recurring gift will ensure the highest quality of programming and the least amount of on-air pledge drives. Don't wait to renew your membership. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit us at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides Begins, and a discussion of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. with the author of three books on the civil rights icon, who also happens to be his niece. Join us for All Sides from 11 till noon. A mix of sun and clouds today and a high of 35, mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 21, partly sunny and a high of 35 on Friday. Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the Central Ohio real estate market with Rob Vogt of Vogt Santer Insight and also Todd Helpbringer of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page as well. We have an email from Peter. He says, how will OSU sophomores living in dorms affect campus housing rents and home values in the campus area? That's an interesting question. I've talked with Gordon Gee about that before, and he thinks it's going to improve the area overall and make it improve the quality of housing off campus.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that it will have some impact on the area east of High Street over and towards the Wineland Park neighborhoods and some of the other campus housing choices that are in that area. I think we're not completely clear as to what is going to happen. We're not clear as to how many dorms Ohio State will actually build over that time period. So it's a little bit hard to predict exactly what's going to happen in that area. But I think overall it will improve the quality of housing that exists in that campus area as there are fewer renters to choose from. The other piece of that is that we're so strong in our rental market right now that a lot of the potential vacancies that are created by the sophomore requirement are going to be replaced with conventional renters that are non-students. So overall, I don't think it's going to have a dramatic impact, but it will have something as we find out more and more about what the exact plans are from Ohio State.
It might also keep the landlords having to keep their properties in better shape. Because, you know,
well, that's what one of my commercial lenders, President Gordon Gee, thinks.
One of my commercial lenders we do business with has a big position in the campus area. And his concern was that, what is that going to do to the housing? I think it might be helping the landlord that always has has zero vacancy to say, hey, I've got to keep my property looking tip-top shape so I can attract, you know, the renters in there. Because a lot of them, because it's such a small market, say, hey, look, I can let this thing go. I don't have to worry about fixing it because I'm going to be 100% occupied all the time. It's going to add some competition, which is good.
Jerome in Marysville. Hi, Jerome.
Hi. I just want to say I pretty much agree with everything the guests have said, you know, about caveat emptor. If you buy a home that you can't afford, you got to take responsibility for that. I just wanted to say that when we bought our home, we had just moved back from overseas from, you know, being overseas for 10 years. And we have no family in the area, no friends. We had no idea what we were doing. We'd never bought a house before. And it is just an overwhelming experience. And we were very fortunate to have an ethical real estate agent who referred us to, you know, several mortgage brokers. And the one we picked was very ethical. And as we're, you know, finalizing, he said, you know, there's other loan products out there. I don't recommend them and you don't need them, but I want to tell you about them. And luckily, I said, nah, I don't want to go that route. Let's just stay with the conventional loan. And oh my goodness, I am so thankful we did that because it was so, you know, there's great temptation in those, you know, other mortgages that, you know, you put little down and pay a lot later.
And the balloon type.
Yeah, balloons. Yeah. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, only a few years later did I read The Millionaire Next Door and realized how many mistakes I've made in my life, but at the same time realizing, all things considered, we've done well. But I just, my point was, you know, caveat emptor is fine, but the way the home buying process works, it really is, you know, stacked against the consumer.
So buyer beware is the...
Yeah, but you can't be. I mean, that's like saying, you know, that's like picking a surgeon. How's the average person going to pick a surgeon? None of us have that skill set to evaluate whether a mortgage broker is being honest or not. Mm-hmm. None of us have the skill set to read through those contracts and all that stuff. You have to, at some point, you have to put your full faith and trust in someone else, because, you know, unless you're going to become a lawyer or an expert in one of those fields, you at some point, all you're doing is you know, hoping that you're making the right decisions, because, you know, even the college educated you know, highly educated person, if it's not their field, if they don't have an experience in business or law, wow, it is just overwhelming.
I just think you go with your gut. If you trust the lady or the gentleman that you're talking to, and they present a fixed rate to you, I always tell clients you never can go wrong with a fixed rate. People try to make their houses crazy thing where I'll get into a 5-year adjustable because I know I can invest my money and do this. And I always tell people, why don't you live in the house and love the house and not worry about it? Get a 30-year fixed and move on to something else. Because again, it is most people's largest investment. And again, I think I'm glad you dealt with a really good broker and a really good realtor. That makes me feel good.
Well, I'll plug the realtors one more time too, I think, as I have in the past. But select a realtor that you trust. Get some recommendations from friends. They've been through this process thousands of times and will help guide you through that process.
Absolutely.
Jerome, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Take care. The number to call is 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. I have an email from Sue. She says, we have been trying to sell for months. We have been so close 3 times now, only to have the buyer's mortgage company not come through. How do I find buyers with better credit who can actually get a mortgage before we go through the contract process and get our hopes up? Yeah, Are there any options?
Well, as I go, I'll back to plug the realtors, Rob. I think having the realtors, typically, I know the ones that I deal with, always have their buyers come to us and get pre-qualified beforehand. So they know exactly what they're dealing with. So the realtor's not out there driving them all over the place and they're not qualified. So we pull their credit report. We get it in their W-2s and their pay stubs. So we know that's not going to be the case. I always have them tell me exactly what price point are they going to be in as the buyer and say, here's what the payment looks like. You qualify. How's it make you feel? Asking those questions. But I agree.
But as far as the seller goes,
yeah,
they don't have any power unless they work with the real estate agent.
Other than the seller and having her realtor or the male or female realtor saying, need to provide me a pre-approval letter.
ASAP. Before we go into contract.
Before we go into contract. Okay. You know, get some teeth in there and make sure that the buyer is doing the right thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great
thing. Are pre-approvals pretty common?
Absolutely.
Is that pretty typical?
We do them all day long. Yep, they're very common. And they're a good point for the client to see where they stand.
Right, ahead of time.
And I tell people, if you're thinking about buying a house next 3 to 6 months, maybe start talking to, you know, help bring a mortgage, talk to a bank, talk to whoever you want to now to see what your credit looks like. Better to correct a problem now than all of a sudden, I love this house and, oh, I got bad credit. You know, you have some time to do it now, so do it in advance versus on the spur of the moment.
We have an email from Sarah as well. She says, I feel the pain of your caller, Beth, from earlier. I have always paid my mortgage on time, but have a 6.1 interest rate. I called to refinance, but I don't have enough equity in the house yet to make it worthwhile. I don't have extra income to pay more than the monthly mortgage, so I just have to sit and wait with my 6.1% rate until I have enough equity. My bank told me to call back in a year. You aren't going to get that much more equity in a year, are you, Rob?
No, but I think what they're hoping for is that price appreciation, that the house would be worth a little bit more over that year time period. But yeah, she's in a tough spot when it's like that.
We have another call from Mark in Pickerington. Hi, Mark. You're having the same problem?
I am, as a matter of fact. We've been in the house about 6 or 7 years. We refinanced about 2.5 years ago from, close to 7% down to 5 1/8, and we also moved from a 30 to a 20-year fixed. And we pay, every 2 weeks, so we get an extra payment every year. My credit score is in the 760s. We have, six-figure investments in our, with our financial advisor. But we wanted to take advantage of the current rate and move to a 15-year. But because of the housing market in the last couple of years, we've lost about 20% of the original value of our home. Mm-hmm. And now we're right at even with what we owe, or maybe a little underwater. But it seems like we're the perfect customer, but we can't seem to get that loan approved.
Yeah, that is a problem. And I do agree that I always tell clients to try to go back to the lender that's currently servicing the loan and just ask them, and I'm sure you have, if they can help out, because when you're upside down or even, they're about the only one that can actually help. The new guy, call that me coming in, I can't push that off to a new investor because they're going to want at least 5% equity. But the bank that's already servicing the loan, if they could help out a little bit, that would be nice. I think having a heart and helping the client out that's made the payments on time is not a bad idea.
So currently that's my only option short of, you know, waiting a year and seeing if the market improves.
Correct. Go to the current servicer of your loan and see if they can, you can work out an arrangement with them. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, right. Mark, good luck.
Bye.
Take care. Email from Brad in Columbus. I was listening to the program earlier, and although you didn't focus on the victim label, referring to people who failed to make mortgage payments and lost their homes, I'd like the guests to discuss who's actually to blame. Now, you know, Todd Helpbringer, you've talked about that a lot. He goes on to say, I spoke to a guy recently who referred to his son as a victim because he got into a property he could not afford. And in the next sentence, this guy admitted to putting $10,000 cash into his son's account to make the son's assets seem higher than they actually were. Seems to me that engaging in fraud of this sort makes a person an active participant, not a victim.
Correct.
So, interesting. I mean, you hear people loaning their kids money for a down payment. That's
sure.
different than
yeah.
pretend making it look like their yeah. assets are greater than they are. It's kind of an interesting thing. Philip. Hi, Philip in Newark. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My situation is that about 7 years ago, I purchased a house with my wife in Florida, and she lives there full-time. It's a full-time residence. And the house cost about $450,000. But after the bust, it was valued at $180,000. The mortgage was an interest-only, locked in for 5 years. We have the house now 7 years, and I've paid it down from the $300,000 that we owed. It's now $200,000. And fortunately, the value of the house has now gone up to $208,000. So I actually have equity in the house. We're presently paying 3% interest, but I'm concerned that the interest rate will go up. So I want to lock in to a fixed rate mortgage, even if it's higher than 3%. So I went to my lender, which is Chase Bank, and I explained the situation to them. My credit is very good. And as I say, in the 7 years, I paid it down $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they can only loan 80% to value. So they say they can only loan $160,000. And in order for me to lock in, they want me to give them an additional $40,000.
You mean to pay more off on the house?
Yes, so I would okay. have more equity in the house.
Mm-hmm. Are they classifying that house as your primary residence or a second home?
No, it is my primary residence.
Okay. That, usually, the reason I ask that, a second home needs to have 20% equity, but if a primary residence, they could refinance that with 5% equity. So again, I hate to say this, I'd go back to Chase, try to get a different person, because I think they're totally misleading you there, that you can refinance your primary residence with 5% equity. So you may have to feed it a little bit, but not $40,000.
Todd, is it possible they have different guidelines in Florida than they would up here?
I can't imagine, because Fannie Mae is governs across the yeah. United States. When you get specific to a state.
This is not Fannie Mae. They're not the servicer. They hold the paper.
It pretty much is Fannie Mae. So what happens, sir, is that every lender tries to underwrite to Fannie Mae's guidelines, because if they decide they don't want that loan, they can sell it to Fannie Mae. So Fannie Mae is kind of your, quote, get out of jail card free. Underwrite to me, I'll buy it from you. Now, Chase may have it on their books, but they don't have to have it on the books. They could sell it to Fannie.
It's a stop or a fail safe type
right.
of thing.
Exactly.
Philip, good luck. Thanks for your call. Take care.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. If you want to get a call in real quick, Carolyn in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
I have to say that I appreciate what Richard Cordray is doing, and I appreciate what Elizabeth Warren did, because as a consumer, I do need some help. When I bought my first home 26 years ago, both the realtor, who was a person that I grew up next door to, so it isn't someone I just picked out of a book, and the mortgage company insisted adamantly that I could buy more house than I kept saying I could buy. I'm glad I stuck to my guns, because when I retired, I probably wouldn't have been able to make the payment. So I'm glad that they're there, because when we took away the deregulations is when we started getting into this trouble. There's no incentive for the mortgage company at that point to sell me a lower mortgage. They made money according to what they sold me, and then they just sold it on down the road, and that's what happened to a lot of us. So I have no idea how you get through this landmine-filled area.
I'm glad you did stick to your guns and you lived amongst your means and you didn't take a different product. I do love that a client actually understands what the payment will be, because that's ultimately who has to make the payment is you. So I think you did a great job. And I agree with you. What I want to have happen is that even though these guidelines are in place, Richard's bringing it to the surface, but they've always been in place. It's this, you know, Greenspan and Clinton got out and wanted this Home Ownership Act, which basically just said, release the hounds and we want home ownership at any cost. That's what the problem
was. I disagree with you, because I think that everybody could own a home. It's just that it needs to be within their means. If you can pay rent, you can pay a mortgage.
Understand, but also some people are incapable of saving the money to keep the house up to where it needs to be. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there are needs for renters and there are needs for home ownership.
Well, yeah, there are people who don't want to to buy a home.
Right.
But I am appreciative that they are there, because I think that we do need some sort of protection, because truly you feel like you're thrown to the wolves. And when people you trust are even pushing you to do it.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I mean, she kept saying, no, look, here, let me show you. Here's how much you make. And
I'm glad
you
stuck to your guns. I am so glad of that, because, yep, you live amongst your means. That's fantastic.
Carolyn, thanks for your call.
So, I appreciate Richard Cordray and Elizabeth Warren and their efforts to try to help the consumer and the middle class, because it's time that we stop being sold down the road for the dollar that's on our head for Wall Street and the mortgage companies.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Carolyn.
Uh-huh.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're running out of time. I'm just going to take an email from Matt in Columbus real quick. He says, I have a question for your guests. I work full-time and make $14 an hour. I have no debt and a credit score of 720. What kind of price range can I realistically afford for a house?
I'd say probably less than 100. And then also down payment structure.
Kind of savings do you have?
Yeah, how much savings do you have? Because if you put down 5%, they're going to want you to have some reserves, like usually 2 times your mortgage payment set aside for reserves. So, yeah, I think you'd be in the 100,000 or less range.
Rob?
Yeah, I agree. I don't qualify buyers like that, but there are certainly a lot of choices in Columbus that you can buy a very nice house in a very nice neighborhood at that price point.
Well, thanks for talking to us today. See you back in maybe 3 months and see how those predictions are turning out.
Thank you.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Ann.
Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Santer Insight, and also Todd Helbringer, president of Helbringer Mortgage Services. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.